Just waiting a moment, another moment or two. Okay. I think, I'm not sure if there are any new people here this morning. Might be. I thought I saw a couple of faces that I didn't recognize, but wonderful Sangha. We have this wonderful Sangha now on Sunday mornings. So I just wanted to mention maybe something that I mentioned the very first time that we did our Sunday morning meditation gathering. So this is a time for some of you maybe to begin a meditation practice, some of you to maybe renew your practice, and for others of you to sustain your practice, support it and sustain it, and also maybe develop it a bit further and wider, deeper, and broader. And of course, during this very difficult stretch of life here on the planet right now, on many different levels, especially the last few days, a whole other bunch of difficult levels have come to the surface here in the US. It's a really important aspect of life and can be so helpful, as I think we all know. So we sit together, we pause in a sense, we pause, take a mindful breath together, or at least a few mindful breaths together. And we're creating an opportunity for each of us, all of us together, creating an opportunity to open our heart and open our mind to what is really a timeless presence of mindful, compassionate, loving awareness as we are in the midst of responding to these difficult times, responding with a deepening sense of interconnection, a sense of deeper sense and wider and broader sense of loving awareness and compassion and courage, clarity, and steadiness of heart and mind. And at the same time, we're probably, hopefully, compassionately acknowledging whatever degree of feelings each of us has of maybe uncertainty, fear, unsureness, right here and now. And I think that one of the things that our practice opens up for us, opens our heart and mind towards, is that for right now, I'm really, really, truly okay. Okay. Okay, okay. So settle into your seat. We'll start our meditation practice wherever you're sitting. Sitting on a chair, sitting on a couch, sitting on a floor, on a cushion. Maybe some of you sitting in a bed. Maybe some sitting inside, some sitting outside. Settling in. And again, today, we will continue with the concentration practice. We'll explore it a little bit more today. So settling into your body, a whole body sense of sitting, mindful awareness of touch points, contact points, the body, the ground, hands touching each other, hands and legs touching, relaxing, attention, mindful attention, bright, alert, present this morning, this afternoon, or this evening. And when the breath appears in your field of mindful presence, receiving it, receiving the sensorial experience of an in-breath and an out-breath at the touching point, the Anapanasat. Somewhere in the area of the nostrils, space between the nose and the upper lip, the upper edge of the upper lip. It's subtle there. The subtlety of the sensorial experience in this part of the body. Just simply because of the subtlety, we're asked to bring a little bit more focused attention to it. It asks for more concentration. Receptive, open, relaxed attention, not tightening up. Concentration has nothing to do with getting tight and trying hard to focus. It's a receptive place of presence with interest. And some of you may be connecting with breath in the abdominal area, in the belly, that's your touching point. That's all right, that's fine. It's a natural breath, not trying to breathe in any special or particular way, not trying to breathe in such a way that makes the breath more obvious. Letting the breath breathe itself naturally and taking an interest in this beautiful breath, this breath of life. An in-breath, an out-breath. And taking your time, beginning again as often as you need to, when the mind spaces out, wanders here and there, gets caught up in some thought train, gets caught up in some emotional state, just simply noticing without judgment, without discussion, recognizing what's happened, letting it go, and gently but with a clear intention to make the breath your primary object of attention this morning, returning and beginning again. Very simple. Not so easy, but very simple. Staying relaxed and alert. as the connection with the breath is more sustaining at the Anapanasat, staying very mindful, noticing the probably more subtle sensations, not analytically, just connecting and noticing. And also this morning, or this afternoon, or this evening today, noticing how the body is being perceived. Perception changes as concentration deepens. So just noticing without any expectation. There may be pleasant sensations occurring. There may be some difficult sensations occurring. Just notice. Your breath is continuing to be your primary object. Not dwelling in the body, but noticing. Also noticing states of mind. Qualities of mind and heart that may be showing up, that you may be sensing and knowing. Not dwelling in these, but noticing. Our intention with this practice at this point is to make the breath sensations at the Anapanasat our primary focus of attention, with interest rooted in a caring heart and mind, and mindfulness, always mindfulness. remembering to begin again anytime. Not spacing out, getting seduced into and lost in pleasant experience, just simply noticing. Not getting caught up in whatever degree of unpleasant experience might show up, just noticing. Staying mindful, beginning again. One in breath, one out breath. At the touching point, May all of the wholesome energies and the fruits that manifest through our practice serve with immeasurable impartiality, without bias, without prejudice, towards the welfare, the happiness, and the awakening of all beings everywhere. So this morning's or today's reflection, we'll begin with a poem. It's called The Celtic Twilight, and it was written by William Butler Yeats. We can make our minds so like still water, that beings gather about us that they may see their own images, and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer life because of our quiet. So today we'll spend some time reflecting, exploring and reflecting on the pure and beautiful mind. And what that means is we're going to spend some time reflecting and exploring the benefits of concentration practice and also of metta practice and insight meditation practice. The benefits are pretty similar. And we'll be exploring what are called some of the wholesome and beautiful states of heart and mind. These beautiful and wholesome states of heart and mind are associated with the development and the fruits of concentration. And as I said, with the development and the fruits of a deepening insight meditation practice, and also with the development of metta practice. All of this includes a growing clarity and a growing depth of mindfulness. The Buddha called mindfulness the chief. This is the quality or the factor of mind that it needs to accompany us through all of our practice. Whatever practice we're doing, we need to be mindful. All the Buddhist meditation practices are both an art and a science. And I think it's important and can be helpful and also inspiring at some point along the way of our practice to actually hear at least some details about some of the more refined experiences, refined experiential processes and experiences that take place in practice, to understand a bit more, or a bit at least, of how the mind and heart work in practice. Over the years of my own practice, I've found this information to be quite interesting in and of itself, as well as the fact that this information, that this understanding, can help to counter maybe some fears and other potential aversive reactions that might come up along the way of practice. And also to counter some of the made up and some of the fanciful stories and various analysis, as well as the misperceptions and misunderstandings and the attachments, the clinging that can come up in practice in relationship to some of our experiences, some of which may be unusual, maybe unfamiliar, and some even in relationship to some of what are more familiar experiences that show up in practice. So we'll be looking at these, or some of them, some of these wholesome and beautiful states that arise, that develop and arise. One of my Burmese teachers used to say that these experiences or these states are called the Dhamma delights or the Dharma delights of our practice. So today we'll look just at the five of these to some degree. These are, all five of these are what we could call active, wholesome mental factors that are part of both the initial and the ongoing development of concentration. And particularly what we've been exploring for the last few weeks, a pure concentration practice. And also they're involved with the focus of attention with metta practice and with also they're very necessary and active components through the practice of insight, vipassana practice. The first, these five practices or these five qualities or capacities of mind, these wholesome states of mind, are actually aspects of practice that I think each one of you are experiencing to varying degrees right here and now in your daily practice, in our Sunday practice as well. So we'll look briefly at each of these. I'll first list them. The first of these is what's called the initial application of the mind. And there's a Pali word for that, which is vitakka. The initial application or the initial attention of the mind, which is what we're right now using as a breath, the initial attention going to the breath. Then the second wholesome quality of mind, of heart and mind, is the sustained attention or the sustained application of the mind on the object. And the Pali word for that is vichara. Now, something to say about these first two wholesome qualities of mind and heart. It's actually only when these two qualities, the initial attention or initial application and the sustained attention or sustained application, it's only when they're accompanied by a healthy, wholesome mind state of mind or wholesome consciousness that they're wholesome. And that sounds maybe kind of obvious to say, but I think it needs to be said because classically these two states or applications or experiences are called occasional. So what does that mean? Well, they're only occasional because if they're not accompanied by a wholesome consciousness or a wholesome intention, a wholesome state of mind, then they're not wholesome anymore. I'm sure that each one of us knows, each one of you knows from your own experience that it's very, very possible to put attention to something that's not wholesome. And sometimes that might even be harmful or hurtful, or something that's completely, totally unnecessary, that might be frivolous or quite unskillful or insensitive. And so then the application, the initial application of the attention and the sustained application of the attention is no longer wholesome. In fact, it probably wasn't wholesome from the start. So our practice of concentration is coming from a wholesome intention. So these two active aspects of our mind are wholesome. The third capacity or quality or wholesome state is called, in Pali, it's piti, but it manifests as a joy, a zest, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. The third one is called sukha in Pali, and that translates as a kind of sweet happiness. It's a very sweet sort of happiness of heart and mind. And the last one that we'll look at today is in Pali, ekagata, which translates as a one-pointedness, a one-pointed attention, which we're all developing as we practice concentration. So looking just a little bit more at each one of these five factors, as they're called, five wholesome and some of them potentially beautiful factors. So this first one, the initial application or the initial attention, meaning again, it's the application of our attention or the application of the mind on the object. So this, in this case, today, for instance, the breath, directing the attention. It has a characteristic of directing the attention to the object at the Anapanasat, for instance, or breath in the belly, or could be to a metaphrase, a particular metaphrase. This quality of attention, or this capacity, or this initial application of our attention, there's a very graphic description of it in the Buddhist teachings called "It Strikes at the Object." So a very physical kind of graphic description, striking at the object. I think of it sometimes as like a training a puppy. Why? Because our mind is kind of like a puppy. It just runs around all over the place, doesn't pay much attention to what we think it should be paying attention to, etc. So it's like the mind, training the mind is kind of like training a puppy. We have to do it again and again and again and again, give it direction again and again and again and again. And finally, it seems that the mind learns to, in this case, pay attention to the breath. So training a puppy, this initial application. It's interesting that this initial application of giving attention to a particular object and learning how to do that, it has the fruit. There's a fruit to it. There's a wonderful thing that can happen, that does happen after a while. It inhibits the feeling of sloth and torpor, sleepiness or lethargy, because the mind and the heart are energized once they start to really connect and pay attention on a sustaining basis. So it's a very wholesome and helpful quality of mind. The second one, we'll look at that just a bit, the sustained attention or the sustained application of the mind on the object. And in the text, the classical text, the characteristic, the way it's described is that it's stroking the object. So it's hanging in there and stroking the object is how it's described. It's staying with it, seeing and knowing how the object is manifesting, how it's being perceived. So you have to stay with it in order for that to happen. So in this case, with our concentration practice, the breath, how is it happening? Mindfulness is the key for that, of course. And if we stay with it, then we have the opportunity to see how it is. The sensations, the movement of the breath, in and out breath, in the Anapanasat, in the touching point, or in the belly. And this particular development of the mind, this capacity of the mind to be able to do that, it has some fruit to it. And so I'll just mention this briefly. It inhibits the hindrance of doubt as our concentration develops. We lose the hindrance or the state of mind of doubt. And it, to varying degrees, it weakens doubt overall as we learn to sustain the attention. We're right there with what is, and we're not doubting that what we're looking at, what we're experiencing, what we're perceiving, or ourselves. We're not doubting ourselves. We're invested and involved in the practice. There's a couple of very nice metaphors or similes, as they're called in the classical teachings, that highlight the difference between the initial application or the initial attention, vitaka, and the sustained attention or the sustained application, vichara. It's said that the initial application, vitaka, is like a bird spreading out its wings to fly. I thought that was a lovely way of expressing it. And the sustained application, vichara, is like a bird gliding through the air with outstretched wings. Many of the similes and metaphors that are used in the classical teachings come from nature. And these are two that I really like. Okay, going on now to the third a factor of our mind, our heart, which is piti in Pali. And it's often translated as joy or zest. This is also an occasional. You remember I spoke about some are occasional. This one is occasional because only if there's no identification and no attachment with it, is it wholesome and beautiful. If there's identification, this is mine, this, I want this, I don't like this, I don't want this, I hate this, I love this, it's my experience, then it's not wholesome and it's not beautiful. If it's just happening and it's being perceived and known, it's wholesome and beautiful potentially. Piti can be quite an endearing experience. And we could explain it as being a kind of delight or a very positive or pleasurable interest in the object of attention, as such as the breath. One of the fruits of piti is that it refreshes the body and mind. And I'm going to describe a little bit of some of the initial stages, the experiential stages of PT. And some of you, I'm sure, have experienced this, and maybe today you did. There's sometimes a kind of sense of these thrills that run through the body. It's physical usually in its initial stages, a kind of thrills running through the body. there's different levels of it that develop as practice develops. There's sometimes some little flashes of light that happen in the body, like little lightning flashes in the mind, not the body. Sometimes it's said that hairs on the body might kind of stand up. So there's a kind of chills and thrills, and sometimes the hair on the body raises when that happens. There might be a feeling of waves moving through the body, kind of like waves breaking in the water, moving through the body, moving over the whole body, like on the seashore. Sometimes people have talked about their feeling as though they're lifting up with PT, the body lifting up, kind of levitating. Some of you might have experienced something like that. Sometimes the feeling is just that the body stretches up and gets taller and taller, kind of like Alice in Wonderland. I think of some of the PT experiences, if any of you have read Alice in Wonderland, some of those kinds of experiences. They are temporary. They are temporary. It's very important to know that. And they change. And if there's, again, if there's no attachment and there's no attachment to them and no identification with them, then they can be, then they are considered to be wholesome and beautiful. If there's attachment and identification, they're hindrances, actually. I mean, the attachment and the identification create a problem and we're stuck. So they're no longer bearing any fruit. Okay, so let's see. As PT goes on, it becomes a less bodily experience as it develops, as concentration develops. But for quite some time, it's felt quite a bit physically. So now I'd like to go on to the next one. The Pali word is sukha, and that's usually translated as a very sweet happiness. And again, this particular development of the mind, and as you remember, I talked a few weeks ago about concentration is the development of the mind. We are developing our mind in particular ways, and now I'm trying to describe some of the particular ways that the mind is being developed. So sukha, sweet happiness. This is a wholesome and beautiful experience or state only, again, only if there's no identification or attachment to it when it's occurring. And because it's such a sweet kind of happiness, kind of an otherworldly happiness, it's very, very easy to get attached to. But then it's no longer wholesome or beautiful. Then it becomes a problem and we're stuck in our practice. So it's an occasional, another one of those occasionals. This factor, this PT, or this sukha factor, this sweet happiness factor, is a very, very pleasant, happy mental feeling. And it's actually born out of the contact with the object, in our case, the breath at the Anapanasati, or potentially breath in the abdominal area, or metaphrases can also help to support or create and support this kind of an experience. Sukha, this sweet, blissful mental feeling, is actually born out of detachment from all sensual experience. So it's not eventually, as it starts to develop and mature, it's not a physical feeling. It's not a feeling in the body. It's a sweet mental feeling, very sweet mental feeling. And it can be very gratifying. Often when we experience this in some ongoing way and it's starting to develop and mature, there's quite an endearing sense of deep gratification that comes up. There's so much appreciation for it. And as I said, because of that, it's very easy to get attached to. We like it. We go from just appreciating it to liking it. And when we start to really like it, that means we're stuck to it. It's not that we don't like it, but can we just appreciate it? Not so easy. Our mindfulness needs to be very, very clear and strong. And one of the fruits of this sweet mental happiness, sukha in Pali, is that it it counters the difficulty or the hindrance, as it's called, of restlessness and worry. It's very valuable that way. So now I'd like to talk about the last one briefly. And this is ekagata, one-pointedness, which is developing every time you sit down to practice and focus your attention, you're in the process of developing your capacity for a one-pointed attention. And this is what's called a universal mental factor. And it literally translates as a one-pointed state. It's really the primary component. It's really the essence of concentration, of samatha, of samadhi. Whether it's a sustained concentration on the breath or on some other experience, some of these other experiences that start to develop and blossom with our practice. It's also an absolutely necessary capacity of mind for metta practice and for vipassana practice, for insight practice. The fruit, one of the fruits that happens with a growing and maturing capacity for one-pointed attention is that it weakens our attachment to clinging to and looking for sensual pleasure. Sensual pleasure happens, but so many people just pursue it almost exclusively. And as we're able to focus with a one-pointed attention on our meditation practice, for instance, on our breath, that compulsion starts to weaken, starts to dissipate. It frees us up quite a bit, actually, when we're not compulsively trying to get sensual pleasures. So just to say it in another way, ekagata, this capacity for one-pointed attention, weakens our tendency, we could say, towards blindly or towards habitually being caught up in various aspects of sensual desire and trying to get something in that way. One-pointed attention, whether it be sustained one-pointed attention or a momentary one-pointed attention, is absolutely necessary for any deeply transformative meditative practice, any deeply transformative meditative attainment. And of course, the function of ekagata is for us to be able to very closely contemplate the object, whatever the object is, whether it's our breath or some other object of our body-mind experience. So I'd like to close the reflection. There's a lot more that could be said about any of this, but just to give you a bit of a taste today about some of what's happening with your practice. In your own heart and mind experience, there's a lot of development of the mind and the heart going on. And hopefully what I've said today will throw some light on that for you. I'd like to close with some words from the Buddha. He's talking, we could say. He is talking. I don't know who recorded it or who wrote it down, because most people didn't know how to write in those days, but somebody wrote it down at some point, and this is what he said, at least as far as we know, many thousands of years ago. Mindfulness with breathing, anapanasati, that one has developed and made much of, has great fruit and great benefit. Even I myself, before awakening, when not yet enlightened, while still a Buddha to be or a Bodhisattva, lived in this dwelling, lived in this way of life for the most part. When I lived mainly in this dwelling, the body was not stressed. The eyes were not strained, and my mind was released from the hindrances, released from unwholesome states of mind through non-attachment. For this reason, should anyone wish, may my body be not stressed, may my eyes be not strained, may my mind be released from the unwholesome states of mind, from the hindrances, through non-attachment, then that person ought to attend carefully to his or her heart-mind, attend carefully with his or her heart-mind to this mindfulness of breathing meditation. So thank you for listening to the Dhamma.